Like, I mean, I named my company Iteration because I love the process of iteration, and I think one of the things it taught me was that exactly that, like, the best ideas are honed and finessed and corralled into existence, and you're not necessarily going to hit a home run on the first try, but you have to keep trying and you have to keep going, and like, it's not actually about the end. It's about the journey. And so then I was at Adore Me for like 3 years, and it was really, really cool because it was like a rocket ship and it was growing really fast, and it was like a really small company when I started, and we were like, just in this really tiny office facing a brick wall. It was not very inspirational. But it was very fun, and I got to participate in the building and like the growth part of like a serious startup fashion brand in the lingerie space. And if anything, it just like further embedded my love for that kind of product. Everybody has their own contributions, and I think it's really helpful to know that the collaborative process is how you make the best things and how you make the most progress against other things, like, your goals, because, I cannot do every single thing within the landscape of my dream of what I can do. Like, I need to have help, and I can be the producer of my dream. I can help, make it all come together, but I don't have to be the person that does every single thing.
Hello, welcome to Underdressed, the podcast where we talk about the clothes under our clothes and exactly how they get made. My name is Trudy Gardner. I'm the freelance designer behind Wayfinder Lingerie. In this show, I'll be exploring the art, practice, and technical execution of intimate apparel. We'll be taking a behind-the-scenes look at this industry and trying to understand exactly how designers balance creativity with functionality, specifically as it pertains to our hardworking yet delicate base layers. Thanks for listening. I'll see you in the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome or welcome back. This week on the podcast, I have Kristen from Kristen Anderson Swim and Intimates Design Studio. And this is a team that I've had the pleasure of joining as a remote freelance 3D designer at the beginning of this year. And it has been such an incredible journey. Kristen leads this team with an open mind and an open heart. And she shows up every day as herself, and she always makes herself available to provide feedback or guidance when it's needed, but she's also open to accepting new ideas and trying to figure out how we can always move the team forward and make us better. And it's this small, close-knit team. And even though we work remotely, we connect almost every single day, and the whole process of design is a very collaborative process where everybody on the team has their own individual contributions that they can make. And it's been such a pleasure working in this capacity. I have learned so much since I started working with the team at the beginning of this year, from initial design concept and how those initial designs are refined, and how that initial design continues to be refined and refined and refined, both design wise and fit wise throughout the process, until we get to the final garment that ends up going out to the consumer. It's been such an incredible experience, and so interesting to see where Clo3D and 3D design fits into that process, and to hear from the team how they have been, because they already started incorporating Clo3D before I joined the team, but how they've been learning to use Clo3D to make their processes better and more efficient. It's been such a fantastic experience, and I can't say enough about how much I enjoy Kristen's leadership, but also the way that the whole team comes together to make ideas come to life. So I'm going to let you go and enjoy the podcast. So as always, thank you for being here and thank you for listening. And I hope you get some value out of this episode. I'll see you in the show.
Hello, Kristen. Welcome to the podcast. I'm super excited to have you on. I've been trying to get you on for a while, and I'm super happy to like finally make this happen. So today on the show, we have Kristen Anderson, who runs her own design agency out of the state of New York, but you're actually located in Connecticut yourself. I'm trying to get the geography. In my mind, it's all New York. Like, you're in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have experience coming up through the fashion industry in New York, and now you're running your own agency with a team of designers, and we will get into all of that as we get into the podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Trudy. It's been awesome having you on my team and hearing about the podcast and hearing the podcast. And so I'm really excited to finally be a guest.
Thank all right. Awesome. Me. Yes. Yes. Okay. Let's start with your experience. How did you get started in the intimate apparel industry, and how have you grown into where you are at today?
Well, it was kind of an accident. I went to school for fashion design at like a state school, and I really wanted to design party dresses when I first graduated. I put a lot of focus on like evening wear and just like glamorous things you would wear, you know, to cocktail attire and whatnot. And then I had a friend who got a job at an intimate apparel design house in, you know, the northern shore of Boston, I guess. And this friend, she started working in intimates, and then there was an opening, and I had been working as a consignment store manager for a little while at that point. So I wasn't really excited. Like, I was not thrilled with what I was doing. It was not using my degree the way I thought, you know, I would be using it. It had taken me I had been doing that for like a year after I graduated. So year after I graduated, working consignment store manager, and then a friend gets this job, North Shore Boston. She says it's awesome. Like, she's working on Fredericks of Hollywood. It's really cool. And then there's an opening. And so she got me an interview. I go to the interview. I must have like nailed it, because I got offered the job like in the office, and it was
nice. So what was that job? What was the opening?
I was like a design assistant for the senior designer in the office. So
okay. And that was for an intimate apparel like small brand?
It was a private label manufacturer. So it was, they're like essentially a design studio of sorts that also you know, does a lot of the sampling in-house. They cool. have their own manufacturing kind of set up there.
Right on. Okay. So you nailed the interview and you got that job. Before we continue on with that story, I wanted to ask about school. Did you feel like your degree in fashion design prepped you to get a job in the industry?
More than I think most fashion schools do, I think it did. Like, I definitely think it made me think about the whole picture and not just like the artistic point of view. Like, I know some schools are not super focused on the technicalities and how things go together and the functionality of clothing, but my school was very focused on that, which I think was really helpful. I also did want to transfer at one point to a different school, mostly FIT. But then I just like, I really loved my college, and I loved my college experience. So I didn't want to leave. And also, they didn't teach you how to make a portfolio till the end. So it was kind of hard to apply.
You can't really apply anywhere without a portfolio.
Yeah. But all in all, I mean, I was really grateful for my experience at Framingham State. I had really great teachers, professors. And I really liked what I learned there. I think applying it was a different story. Like, I think I had a good baseline in college, but like in actuality of like using it, I think you have different applications in the real life setting.
Absolutely. You know, like, yeah. That's with anything. Learning and experience are two different things. Like, learning teaches you how to learn, which is good. That's a skill. But then actually applying that skill to things that are useful in the world is another skill.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And having the resourcefulness of like knowing how to navigate through the things you've learned, you know?
Yeah, exactly. How to apply the things that you have learned to things that are going to have utility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you nailed the interview, you got the job, you're a design assistant at this business. And then where do we go from there?
Well, I was there for about a year and a half. I really enjoyed it. I worked my way up really quickly. I got promoted from a design assistant to an associate designer in like 7 months because the senior designer I was working for, she got promoted, or no, she didn't get promoted. She left for another job. And so I took on a lot of her accounts. So it like taught me a lot really fast, which was really cool. And then there was like a big clash in the industry and Fredericks of Hollywood went bankrupt. And that was a big client of my existing employer. So when that happened, the whole company had to like kind of be restructured and they let go of like 4 or 5 designers. I unfortunately was one of them, even though I did not work on the Fredericks of Hollywood account. And even though I was working on accounts that were growing and actually exceeding the yearly expectations. So it was a really eye-opening experience to be let go from that job. And then I started freelancing for the very first time at that point. And I was there doing that for about a year, working with new brands, growing brands. It was not the same at all. It was like terrible to freelance back then because there was not applications for what we needed to do. But then, you know, after about a year of doing that, I had applied for a job at a Dormy.
So I applied at a Dormy. It was a really weird, interesting situation. My previous boss at the old company that I had gotten let go from, she had been in the Dormy office like the day after I applied. And so the woman who would become my future boss, Helen Mears at Adore Me, she asked Colette, my old boss, about me. And there was like a nice exchange. Colette like told her, you know, she loved me and whatnot. And I had a really great interview. It was another instance of like being really like lucky. I got offered the job like basically on my way home. So like I wasn't even fully like on the way back home from my interview and I got called. And so then I was at Adore Me for like 3 years. And it was really, really cool because it was like a rocket ship and it was growing really fast. And it was like a really small company when I started. And we were like, you know, just in this really tiny office facing a brick wall. It was not very inspirational. But it was very fun. And I got to participate in the building and like the growth part of like a serious startup fashion brand in the lingerie space. And if anything, it just like further embedded my love for that kind of product and the atmosphere of startups and, you know, working on things creatively and thinking about, you know, changing things quickly and the iterative process. And I loved it, every part of it.
Awesome. Okay. So, I can't wait. So I have a question on my list and maybe it's an appropriate time to ask now. What lessons did you learn at Adore Me through that growth and watching that whole, the startup, atmosphere from the beginning to it growing into a very large company? What lessons have you learned from that experience that you now apply to your agency? And we haven't talked about it yet, but also iteration. So to the projects that you are trying to grow yourself now.
I think one of the things I have learned is that, direction is actually more important than speed. I think in a lot of situations, like Adore Me has been a long built company, you know, like they just sold to Victoria's Secret in, you know, January of this year, but it took them 10 years to do it. It's nothing that good and, you know, nothing is always is fast. Like you want it to be fast and you want it to be quick, but the truth is that everything's going to take the time it takes at the end of the day. And if you're building something really great and meaningful, then, you know, it's gonna be a 10-year journey probably. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, I'm in the middle of that with a lot of things. So it's a frustrating place too. Like in some instances you will get tired of the like process and whatnot, but it's also very rewarding in very like interesting cycles. So it's very motivating every time you get one of those like loops completed, and then you're like, now I got to take it to the next loop. And so I think I named my company Iteration because I love the process of iteration. And I think one of the things it taught me was that exactly, that like the best ideas are honed and finessed and corralled into existence. And you're not necessarily going to hit a home run on the first try, but you have to keep trying and you have to keep going. And like, it's not actually about the end. It's about the journey and getting there. So
that's beautiful. I love it. And I this is the reason, like, I was following your blog post and your social media for a long time before like we actually connected. And I feel like that's like always been a lot of our values are we share a lot of values. And that's one of the like underlying currents that I always have seen through information that you put out there is that I wrote it down. There's a saying that we used to say in flying. It was like all vector and no thrust. You don't get anywhere. Right. Like, I'm sorry. It's the other way around. It's all thrust and no vector. Right. Like if you don't have like a specific heading that you're trying to get to, you're just going to end up crashing. Like it's just, that's the way it will work out. And I totally believe the same thing that you have to fail many. Seth Godin is an author that we both like, and he said that you have to fail small many, 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 many times before you actually find success. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I believe as well. So I love that as a lesson. So it's just, you're going to have to take it slow. Endurance, right, is the goal, and not immediate wins. But do you measure small wins along the way to sort of just keep you going?
I definitely measure them on some level. I like to journal a lot, so I keep track of things that happen in my life through my journal quite a bit. I make lists and I make, you know, charts sometimes and whatnot. And I often go back through my journals and, you know, on a regular basis, like, I don't know, on a yearly look, I like to go back and kind of look through my old lists and see where I've actually accomplished things that were like longer term goals. So I love doing that. That's like actually one of my favorite parts of actually journaling in general, is like the ability to go back in time, and the snapshot of like what I was thinking a few years ago is so like the trajectory of thought is very clearly different and like upward, which is nice. But it's also just like, I try to write positive things in my journal. I try to like, I mean, obviously if something bad happens, I'll talk about it a little bit, but most of my journal is kind of about getting there and moving through the hard stuff, but like in a positive, optimistic perspective, because I know I am capable, and I know like in all of this, like, the task is challenging, yes, but like confidence is a long journey and you have to keep doing it, you know, like just the resistance is big, is the most important part, you know?
Yeah. And the way you gain confidence is by going through the challenges and seeing how, like, that I think reflection is a great way to evaluate, because you can see that, okay, like especially when you journal and you can get a little bit of perspective, you can look at something that happened a while ago and you can now see, when you have perspective and can see where you, what direction you took after that and whether it positively or negatively affected you, you can make decisions to either switch directions or understand that that was a good decision at the time, and you can keep making more decisions like that. So yeah. I like that strategy. I like it.
Another thing I like to remind myself of, though, is that like a decision is just that, and I can undo it if I want to. If I make a decision and I need to turn back, like there is nothing wrong with that. And it's a thing I have to remind myself of constantly. Like, you know, we want to make perfect decisions as people, as entrepreneurs, but like it it's hard. So just know that, make a decision, and then know that if it's the wrong decision, you can usually find a way to undo it, you know?
Yeah, totally. I feel the same way. If you get caught up in not making any no decision is no movement. You're stuck. Like, you're not going anywhere. Whereas like when you make a decision and it's wrong, then you can evaluate and make a different decision next time. Or if you make a decision and it's the right one, then you can continue making decisions in that respect the next time as well. Like, I agree. Like, you make decisions, like move forward, make movement.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's circle back around to you working at Adore.me. So, you got to see the company grow, and then where did you transition next?
So after Adore.me, I decided I needed to move to a job that had like more work-life balance. And so I got a job at a company called Swim USA, which was a private label swimwear manufacturer. And I was doing the design for Target's Missy swimwear, which at the time was a brand called Merona. And so I didn't know when I had gotten that job was that Merona was going to go away in like, I don't know, 8 or 9 months. And then we were going to have a new brand. And so I got to participate in the, you know, building the line plan and the execution of the first debut collection for a brand new brand called Kona Soul at Target. And so that was a really, really fun part of working at Swim USA, because it was like, you know, very collaborative, and, you know, they gave us a lot of information on what this profile looked like and who their customer was and what they were trying to execute. And, you know, it was different than Merona. And so it was like this, you know, experience of kind of letting Target like opened the door for like this new opportunity, and it was so different than what they had before that it was just really, really fun to kind of step into it. It was just like a whole new world. And so I was there, and, you know, I got to watch that, and there was another brand. What was it? There was another, it's instance, like a smaller instance of kind of the same thing that happened with a brand at Kohl's called Every. And that brand also was like a plus size company that was, you know, we were doing swimwear for them, and we were helping them launch into like a new customer. So like getting into that like mindset of like the customer profiles, and like seeing like a brand be built multiple times in multiple cycles, like it was really interesting to me. I also was like at the time like bootstrapping my first business/brand, which was a brand called Fearless that I was working on. And like I was doing that before, like right before I left Adore.me. I started working on it like 6 months maybe before I left Adore.me. It was part of why I left Adore.me too, so that I could, you know, bootstrap and work on my brand more. And so I was working on my brand for about 2.5 years. It was really, really challenging, because I was working full-time job at Swim USA, and then I would come home and I would try and do it in the morning, and I would try and do it in the evening sometimes. But I was trying to do every role basically while I was doing that for my business. And it was like so miserable and horrible. And like, I did so bad, cause I can't do everything well. I can't learn everything.
Yeah, that's you. Absolutely. You cannot do everything well yourself. You just can't, and you won't want to, and you won't enjoy it, and then the things that you don't enjoy won't be done well. So as soon as you can like pass off things that you don't like doing that need to get done, that's I think that's the way to go.
I thoroughly agree. I learned so much in the process, but it was very, very eye-opening. But I also realized that a lot of founders kind of do the same thing, a lot of fashion brand founders. So I think in the whole process, at some point, a friend of mine, you know, I was helping her actually with her brand. And I was, you know, showing her some trend reports that I had from, you know, WGSN. And she was like, you should like offer consulting services to people and stuff. And like, I don't know, the idea did finally struck a chord, even though I had like thought about it before, cause like I had freelanced before, and it was the pits in the first time I had done it. So it was just so bad that I didn't really want to repeat it.
Can you talk a little bit about that? What was the difference between freelancing the first time around and then when you started this, I assume this evolves into Kristen Anderson eventually.
It does. It does. Okay. So the first time I started freelancing, set the picture, set the stage, it was 2012. I know that doesn't sound that long ago, but that is actually a crap ton of long ago. Yeah. That is so long ago. Yeah. In
all of anything pre-COVID now is like a different lifetime.
Yeah. It was like a whole nother generation, people. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like,
yeah.
But in that time period, like, so many things have changed throughout the internet and improved and made it easier to become a freelancer and to have.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's not even just pre-COVID. It's like that's the beginning of the internet. That's like I can remember, like, there's not even online shopping yet. Like, that's not a normal thing yet. So, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, Apple iPhones came out in like, what, 2007
or 8
or something?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
which was so the beginning. Like, that was like, people were like, yeah, that's just the beginning. So yeah, I remember like you're still using the yellow pages back then, right? Like the book, like, to find businesses.
We hardly like optimized websites to go on a phone. Like, you couldn't really like see a normal, like, it was just weird. And it mostly, there just wasn't subscriptions or things that like the thing I used to invoice people, like, I just,
right,
I, there wasn't, that didn't exist. And it's just like, the everything has become so much easier. It's more digital, it's more connected. I mean, I think in some ways it's more challenging too, but I think you know, for the vast majority, it's way more helpful.
Like, when we're trying to record a podcast and your AirPods stop working at the beginning of it, just for example.
exactly yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. So it was just, technology was a big factor back then. Like, the things that are easy now weren't, the way that technology makes things easy now weren't available when you started. So things like invoicing and probably like meeting with people, if you have to meet with them online. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Meeting people, finding clients was harder. Everything was harder. Also, it was harder because I lacked experience, and I've heard that you don't freelance when you're new and you have no experience. You freelance when you're, you know, you've got the experience and you can tell people what to do, because a lot of freelancers, like, you have to have that experience first, usually, to really be able to. I mean, I know your story is a little different, so I think
I can talk a little bit about that, because this is actually like a very interesting point.
I mean, I think I was able to do it, and I think you, if you're a resourceful person, you can do it. I just think it's also like, it's challenging because you have to prove yourself a lot. Mm-hmm.
You have to find a skill that somebody needs. And often when you're a freelancer, they're coming to you for your experience so that you can give them guidance through whatever they're trying to do. And yeah, when I started freelancing, I knew I didn't have that. So like, I was like, the skill that I can offer you is like, I know how to use Illustrator. And like, who wants somebody that knows how to use Illustrator? It was small, independent pattern makers who were just like selling to like home sewists. I was like, that, like, that's my in, like, that's where I can start getting some experience. What you said about resourcefulness, I think, is like, you have to try to find the key where you can be useful and like still add value to whatever you're doing. And yeah, when you're starting out, there's, I had nothing. I was like, what skills can I develop that are going to be useful to somebody that doesn't have them? And 3D was then the next in for me.
Absolutely. I feel like the hard part in 2012, when I was back there, like, I also wasn't a specialist of any kind. And it was like way harder to specialize because the internet was still so like underdeveloped, and you couldn't search for exactly what you needed and like find it, actually.
And probably not a lot of guidance on freelancing either. Like, there wasn't a lot of resources that you could be like, what are fashion freelancers doing? Like, what's like, how were they operating? Yeah, there's just nothing. Okay.
It's a wasteland.
Okay. Okay. Let's fast forward back to So when you started transitioning back, like as when you decided, like you had your own brand sort of going on the side, and you also decided to start doing a little bit of consulting, was part of the reason that put you on that path was because you had more resources to support the new endeavor? Like, for example, just access to the internet, apps that could help you do your invoicing, Zoom so that you could do online calls, this type of thing?
I don't even know if I was really thinking about the resources at the time, to be honest. I had basically, like, in 2018, I had kind of put to bed the original brand that I was working on, Fearless. I said, you know, I have fallen out of love with this idea. It feels like there's clashing thoughts I have around it now. And I think I need to put it away for a while because I don't think I'm ready for it. I think I need to learn more. I think I need to do more before I am ready for it again.
Well, that's exactly what we were talking about, right? Like failing in small ways. You took the lessons that you learned for that and from that, and you moved on.
Yep. Absolutely. And then, so that was like, I think in the middle of 2018, maybe. And then by the end of 2018, I had decided, you know, I'll make a portfolio website, I'll start that, and then I'll see what I can do as far as getting freelance work. Based on that conversation I had with my friend Alina, actually. And then, you know, I went, what happened? That was in 2018. Then in January, like January of 2019, I got like a LinkedIn message from somebody that used to live in New York City. She was actually like the me before me was like a designer at Adore Me. So like I was the person who actually replaced this gal at Adore Me, but like she wasn't a designer. She was like a merchandiser. So her name was Emily, and Emily moved and she had gone to Idaho, I think. And they were looking for, she had a friend who was like looking, she wasn't even working at this job, but she had a friend and another job in another role that was looking for an underwear designer for a period panty company called Salt. They actually weren't even making period panties at that time. They only were making like menstrual cups. And so my first gig ended up being with them, helping them, you know, concept out their period panty collection, their first collection. And that was really fun and it was really exciting. And that was like from January to maybe March or April of 2019. And it made me realize, oh, I could do stuff like that. Like, I like this. This is fun. Like, it was really enjoyable. So it kind of gave me the idea to just start working on stuff like that more and trying to get the work. So I started like looking at places that I could try and muster, you know, to like find freelance work. And then I think I actually found it on something like Upwork maybe. And I had seen like a listing for something that looked really interesting. And I think they may have, I don't know how it actually transpired now because I feel like the memory is like all but gone. But I know I like found her on Upwork at some point, but we never worked through Upwork because I didn't have an active Upwork profile and I wasn't like actively looking on that platform. But I really don't remember much beyond that. I'm pretty sure we found each other on Upwork and did not work through Upwork. But
okay.
I found my first client, my second client. It's actually one of my clients right now. But it ended up being really wonderful. And then I think it's been a while since I've thought about this story, but
yeah.
In April of that year, I was still working at the swimwear company. And in April of that year,
You were still working while you started doing the freelancing was happening on the side at the time. Yes. Okay.
Yes. I was still at the swimwear company and I was doing it on the side. I was freelancing on the side and I was working at the swimwear company. And in April of 2019, I told my boss, I'm like, I think I need to go on a sabbatical. And I showed her a pitch deck. I like walked her through why this is going to be good for Kristen and good for the team and good for management and good for everyone. Like, it was like 12 or 13 pages. It was serious. And I talked about what I was going to, like, you know, the benefits of it. And I was going to I was going to go to Bali. I was going to go there for 3 months. I was going to work on print design and, like, kind of relaxing and taking it easy. And I had gotten my job to sort of agree to this. And then kind of everything went to shit a little bit. They had agreed to it, but the numbers weren't the same and we didn't see eye to eye on things upon my return from Bali. So when that all happened, it was like, it was very strange. It was just a very strange problem to be in. But I thought I was going to go back and like freelance with Swim USA. Like I said, all of it kind of went hayward very fast. I didn't end up freelancing with them when I returned, which was in, you know, November of 2019. And then at that time, I had two existing clients that I had taken with me to Bali. I had worked on their stuff for like 20 hours a month. It was like very light lifting work. And then when I got home, I had those two clients. I had no other freelance jobs. And I was like, well, this is going to be hard. I also was living in my mom's basement because we had packed up our New York apartment and we were like, we were not going to go back to New York. Most likely we were trying to buy a home, me and my husband. And we didn't know where, but, we were planning to buy a home. And then we moved into a Stanford apartment in January of 2020. And I turned the lights on for the business kind of like figuratively. And I started looking for more business. I started kind of going out to my contacts. I started networking a little bit more. I had done a pretty good job and I had gotten like three new clients in that like 2 month window of January to February of 2020.
That's amazing.
It was really good. And then it wasn't because March of 2020 happened.
Right. Yeah.
I like basically lost the clients that I had just gotten, but I didn't lose my two that I had from when I had gone before. The two existing businesses that I was the two businesses that I had brought along the journey from Bali back home, those businesses, they like all went like a little pause and went in COVID and they were like, we're going to take a break. But then everybody else turned on and then we got really busy because everybody's home. Mm-hmm. And everybody decided.
Now everybody's like, now's the time to start a new business.
Exactly. Yeah. And I feel like that was a big part of it. So I was really busy. I had like six or seven or eight new clients by the end of the year. Wow. And I had help. And I was like, I had Jasmine helping at that point because she was an intern for me over summer of 2020. Now she works with me full time, but it was like a crazy time and it taught me a lot, but it also was just bananas for running and operating your own business. It was like the world was like, became a lot easier for me to adapt and be successful because I had already been doing this for a little while. So it was like, not that hard actually.
For sure. All the lessons that like everything, like I love this. I love your story. It's so beautiful. Like you take all the lessons that you learn and then you can just keep applying them. You're a decision maker. Like you make decisions and you move forward. And even though things aren't perfect and they don't go the way that you expect them to all the time, like you're like, okay, what's the next thing? Like, what's the next thing that I can do? And like, even in the small time that I've been on your team, I've seen you approach decisions that way. So, I love it. So you're just going to keep growing. I definitely see it. So we had, where are we at? So you started growing your team. Jasmine came on your team and then you picked up a few other people. You got Monica at some point, who is your pattern maker. Yep. And then you also have Riley, who is your social media manager. And then me this year. So, do you want to go into the details a little bit about growing your team, how you've grown as a leader throughout this?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so it was kind of an interesting thing. I had a coach that was helping me in summer of 2020 through maybe early 2021. And she was really, really helpful. She had me, you know, get a virtual assistant, which was really helpful at the time. And that virtual assistant is actually the person that connected me to Jasmine. So Jasmine ended up being on my team, you know, early 2020. And it was really helpful because she is like the first person that like touches a garment and measures it and checks it and gives the first eye. So I had her start in May-ish of 2020. And then I think around the same time, Riley had actually reached out to me and like wanted to talk and just kind of chat a little bit. So we set up like a Zoom, I think similar to one that you and I would then have also, like, and her, Riley and I talked, and, you know, it wasn't like, I wasn't really ready for Riley to come on as a team member then, but I was also really interested in her work and her interest and her, you know, approaching me and being thoughtful about it the way she was. Like, I saw something interesting there. So, you know, I said to Riley, it wasn't the right time, but maybe, you know, come back and keep in touch and, you know, things happen. And so Riley and I stayed in touch, and then I started giving her freelance work like in the fall, maybe of 2020. So it had been a little bit of time. And I wasn't really ready to have her full time. And then at some point in early 2021, I met Monica. She was also another person who just like reached out to me and, you know, she said something interesting. I was looking for a 3D person. Actually, I think I was looking for a 3D technical person, and she was actually a technical designer, but she had not been in 3D, but she wanted to learn it. She was really interested in learning it. And so that was in like May of 2021. And then she and I started working really soon after meeting, like maybe within two months of meeting each other, we started working on some things. She then like worked with me for like a little bit before that summer. And then she went on her own like sabbatical journey thing in like the summer of 2021. And then she came back to me at the end of the year and she was like, hey, I did some work. I learned Clo. And she came back and like just really, really impressed me with all of the things she had done to like take her skills to the next level while we were not working together. So that was really cool. And we started working together again more regularly. Now she's got her van. And so she like travels around South America and is much more easy to access now because she has like a global satellite internet, which wasn't the case before. So I think her lifestyle was not the best match for what I needed at the time. But I think it's a much better match now, given the situation. And yeah, then much like those ladies, I mean, similar to that, like, I think about a year and a half ago, maybe you had reached out to me and started, you know, we had a conversation, you were interested in learning about the intimates industry and you were very, keen to learn. I could tell that you were really like somebody who was going to follow through. So I was excited to watch your journey and to see you keep going at it. And then, you know, you and I were part of the IA, I don't know.
Technical Collective.
Is it the IA? Is it IA?
Yeah, Intimate Apparel Technical Collective.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think every time I think of IA, I don't know why, it like escapes my brain. Okay. You and I were part of the Intimate Apparel Technical Collective. And so I had seen you a lot in there. You're part of their like the team, actually. So it was really interesting to watch you through that lens. And you know, I think it's like an interesting experiment to kind of bring somebody new onto your team to see how they work and jive, and like, so far so good. Like, I think we all like have like a good sense of our own responsibilities and what we bring to the team. And I've been really happy to have you and everyone else on the team. You know, it's everybody has their own contributions. And I think it's really helpful to know that the collaborative process is how you make the best things and how you make the most progress against other things, like, you know, your goals, because, you know, I cannot do every single thing within the landscape of my dream of what I can do. Like, I need to have help, and I can be the producer of my dream. I can help, you know, make it all come together. But I don't have to be the person that does every single thing.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Nobody else has to be that either. You know, yeah. Like, I feel like that is important. It's so much weight on your shoulders to think you have to do all of it. you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So now you have a team. You have a team supporting like all of your endeavors that are moving forward, which is cool. Let's talk about 3D. So that's how I ended up coming on your team. When we met a little over a year ago, you talked a little bit, I don't know if you talked about it. I just reached out. Like, I was like, I am trying to figure out how to get experience in the industry. What are skills that are useful? And I think one of us said like Clo 3D is like I might've asked you about Clo 3D and you're like, yeah, that's a skill. Like that's a skill that could be useful. And I think the whole industry is trying to figure it out right now, exactly how it is most useful in the production process. Can you tell me how you see it being used, how we're using it right now? Or maybe I should be the one talking about that. Why were you interested in bringing the 3D skill into your team?
Well, I think seeing things in a real-time 3D model when it takes, you know, 3 to 4 weeks to make a garment sample in a factory setting, the comparison of time that it takes to make a render versus, I mean, actually in reality, they take a long time to do it well, but at the same time, the instant gratification of the 3D development process is really, it's really helpful, number one, for people who are creatives and want to see their things come to life like instantly, because that is, it's like, it's almost like the draping process, kind of like you're doing it and you're kind of bringing it together and like you're changing it as you do it, because you're like seeing how it looks and you're like, no, I actually don't like it like that. You know, exactly. I actually like it the other way.
And yeah, yeah.
To do it efficiently and effectively and to like be able to do it really well and show the product through the like stages of the development. So like in my mind, there's like the possibilities for use are unlimited really, but right now we're using it for the development cycle. So for this point right now, like we generally use it as like a starting point of, you know, our first fit. We try and do a first mock fit on our 3D models and see what, you know, our patterns look like on our first take. And then we make adjustments, and we probably have so many different pattern adjustments and corrections that are made before we ever cut a sample that it's like insane to me to think that like we used to do it differently, because like there are so many like minor, intricate, little tiny things that like have actually translated huge, like, I mean, not huge, but like exactly as I thought they would. Like when I saw like the image in Clo versus real life, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I see it now. And like hindsight is a little bit, it's easier to see in hindsight, because I didn't trust myself when I saw it on the 3D render, but now I see it in hindsight, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely a learning experience. Like, is the same thing with me. Even when I started working in 3D, I was like, I didn't see a lot of opportunity. Like, I didn't know if companies or brands were employing 3D. And I was thought that maybe it's because the 3D software wasn't good enough. But I think it's more our human trust for realizing that it is useful. Because now the way that we could look at it, we get our first sample in 3D, and then we make decisions, design decisions based on what we think will look good. And then we send that pattern out, have it made by the factory, and it comes back. And then we can see if what we have physically matches what we have digitally. And now if we have a problem with the physical product and you look back at the digital product, you're like, oh yes, that same problem is there. And the reason why we didn't see it in the first place on the digital product is because we didn't trust it. And I think as we grow and we move forward, we're going to be able to make better decisions and be able to like require less samples and just be more efficient, more sustainable, waste less time, waste less product. I definitely see it now.
Absolutely. I mean, I think also just being able to see the patterns in the reality of time, like there are so many things that can be solved if you could see the pattern and you could just look at it, because like you can just know that does not look right. You
that's
know?
Not what that's not what that arm was supposed to look like. And you can see it in 3D at the same time. So we're like looking at the pattern, and then you can look over at the 3D side of the window and you'd be like, this is why that's happening. And it's right away. I was talking to Sophia Luzon about this on a podcast that I recorded earlier this week. And she, we're saying the same thing. Like, she teaches at a university, and she said now she brings up Clo. It's like she's brought that into her process. Her students are learning hand pattern drafting, like they're learning drafting by hand. But to show her lessons, she brings up Clo and she's like, this is the pattern. And, you know, like a corset pattern piece, like it doesn't make any sense when you're just looking at the pattern. But then she can show the 3D side of it as well. And this is what it looks like. This piece, you know, this piece that I'm like selecting right now is that yellow piece in the 3D window. So even for teaching and understanding how patterns work, it's a really, really effective tool. And this isn't just Clo 3D. It's like any 3D modeling software.
Absolutely.
Makes that available for you. Okay, cool. So 3D. So trusting 3D. So we have both recently discovered Alvinon, which is pretty cool because Alvinon has a full series of 3D digital avatars, and they also have their physical forms available as well. And so you got to test them out. So there's a studio in New York that you got to go to with the team yesterday. And I was like, this is like this fun field trip I wish I could have been on. But this is our first time being able to talk about it. So I created some of those samples in 3D for us to look at, and you guys got to bring them to the studio. So how was that experience?
It was awesome. It was really cool. We got there and there was only like the receptionist, Joanne, who was just awesome. I just want to give her a big shout out. Joanne at Alvinon was great. She was like, she told us that she had sent us an email and that like we were, you know, not able to come to the fitting because there was something wrong with the air quality. She had a mask on and they were doing some kind of like construction work around the office or something. And so she told us that they were closing early, and then we were like devastated because we were half an hour early. So we were like in journey, I think, when she had sent the email, and people had flown from far away places to come to the studio. So we like, we told her like, we can't come back on Monday because she wanted
us. We had this small window that we could actually go to the studio.
Yeah. And she was an angel. So she let us stay, and we stayed in the office for like two or so hours. We got to test out some of the forms. It was really cool. She gave us like a really big meeting room, and there was lots of forms in that room. So we got to test like a lot of things. It was really interesting. Some of my favorite parts, there's like the plus size form that we were using has arms that are just unlike any other dress form I've ever seen. They like pivot, and they like pivot really like very, very easily with like just a super like graceful, like, so yeah, that was really fun. It was really fun to see the patterns that you and our team had worked on for like grading and trying that out. I was semi sad because we only had like two bigger sizes to work from, and they were not that big, so I really wanted a little bit bigger form. But given what they looked like, they looked really good. I mean, all of our 2x samples were really great on the size 20, and then we kind of had some decisions to make when we were looking at the different grading of our factory versus ours, and I think for the most part we pretty much thought ours was the better option. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to try and get a fit model as well so that we can test it more on a person. Cause I think it's
Absolutely. Ultimately, like that's always ultimately we're making products for people. So they have to be tested on people.
Soft
it's
body.
Just a tool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. So Alvinon was good. So did they compare? So you had seen the 3D samples before, and then
you got to go into the studio and try them on physically?
I had not pulled up the forms in the moment, but now that you've got it, I think I would say that they probably compared pretty well. I would be more curious to see it on the bigger sizes, because I think those were, like, in our grading, the thing that we noticed, so just so the audience is really clear, like, the grading, it starts off in the plus size realm, it starts off and it looks really good on our 3D renders for the most part, and then it gets progressively more baggy and worse on the biggest sizes. So we don't know if it's actually that, you know, our grading is too high, or if it's just, you know, a matter of
the model that we have it on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
cool. Oh man. Like, so yeah, I can't wait to hear more about like what happened at Alvinon. I think I'm sure our team will talk about it a little more after.
Yeah. It was really nice to see the forms. I think it was also very eye-opening. I'm not sure if I would use some of the forms in some instances, because I think that they're very extreme on some of them.
Like plus size ones?
Well, no, the plus size ones I thought were pretty good. I think the 34Bs and 34Cs, I can't remember which one we were working on, but it was just a very extreme underbust to bust ratio for the size it was supposed to be, in my opinion anyways. And that's, so you know what, you know what opinions are, so like it seemed like she had a lot of cup to her, you know.
Hey guys, future editing Trudy popping in here. If you want to know a little bit more about this and about cup sizing and about the Alvinon avatars, Sophia and I are going to be doing some Twitch live streams. It's just an experiment that we are working on at the moment. But I'm going to bring in some Alvinon avatars. We'll measure their underbust and their overbust measurements and see what the cup sizes are based on what sizing systems, just as a fun little experiment for us to do. So if you want to see that, I will be publishing our Twitch live stream information at some point. If you want to find out about it, just make sure that you're following me on Instagram. It's Underdressed Lingerie Podcast. And also I'll leave a link so that you could be on my email list as well if you're interested in that. Okay, I'll let you get back to the podcast. All right, cool. Well, we are closing in on an hour now. I have two questions left for you. So the first one that I have written down here was, what are the most essential ingredients to success, let's say, for brands that reach out to you that want to develop a new brand or improve their existing brand? Like, what are the key factors that you find that you've seen across different brands that contribute to their success?
I would say there are two major things. Really, really knowing who your customer is, the demographic you're going for, understanding that they really truly want the thing you're making for them, and then also having a unique selling point. Because if you are really forgettable, nobody's gonna ever come to you and remember to share you with a friend. Like, you have to have something that sets you apart and makes it clear that, you know, you're not just doing this for the giggles. It's for, you know, something beyond that. And I think a lot of brands fall short on that part more than anything. Like, a lot of people know how to target their customers, but keeping their customers happy and like a long-standing relationship with them is very rare in our world, actually. And I think, you know, if you can build a relationship with your audience and give them something that is truly unique and special that they can use in their life, that solves a problem for them, you know, that is what's going to make you successful. And obviously, awesome. Not giving up, the persistence and grit to continue on when things get hard, because they will.
Yeah. Okay. And the last question is, well, it's a two-part question. What is your favorite part of being a designer or running the design agency now? And what is your least favorite part?
I think my favorite part is the team I work with is so wonderful and keeps me learning and growing, and they're very good challengers to me being stagnant. So I really, really love that. And then my least favorite, I hate billing people. It's not fun.
Invoicing. Yeah.
Anything to do with that side of the business, I'm like, get somebody else to take care of this.
Okay, awesome. Kristen, it's been a blast. I'm so happy to have had you on the podcast. I'm glad we finally got it done.
Me too. And I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a wonderful chat.
Yes, awesome.
I feel like we didn't cover everything you wanted to cover, though. So maybe
I know exactly. An hour always goes by so fast. So definitely, we can have a part two for this because we never even got to talk about iteration very much. Yeah, so maybe we'll have a part two. I find that I often say there's several podcasts that at the end of it I'm like, we're gonna have to have a part two to this.
That's funny. I wouldn't be very glad to have it. I would very much welcome it. So.
Awesome. Beautiful. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Hey, Trudy.